जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरोधारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरोधारी किशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना किशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुन तीर वन चारी यमुन तीर वन चारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरोधारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवरोधारी किशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना किशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुन तीर वन चारी यमुन तीर वन चारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य स्तोत्र सत श्री श्रीमद्भवाई गैश भक्ति वैरांत स्वामी प्रभु पार की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय निताय गौ प्रेमानंदे हरि गो समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय आ गवेश दिय संबल देवती आ गवेश श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 15, Description of the Kingdom of God. Text number 46. I don't think there's a chapter in any other book in the world, is there, entitled Description of the Kingdom of God? There's not much to describe. Nobody knows what to say about it. But we have it. So this is text 46. Word meanings, Kumara Uchuhu, the Kumaras said, Yaha, he who, Antarhita, not manifested, Hridi, in the heart, Gataha, is seated, Api, even though, Duratmanam, to the rascals, Twam you, Sahi, Adya, today, Eva, certainly, Naha, of us, Nayanamulam, face to face, Ananta, O unlimited one, Radha, attained, Yarhi, when, Eva, certainly, Karna Vivarena, through the ears, Guham, intelligence, Gataha, have attained, Naha, our, Pitra, by our father, Anuvarnita, described, Raha, mysteries, Bhavat Udbhavena, by your appearance. Kumara Uchu Yontarhito Ridigato Piduratmanam Tvam Sodhyaivano Nayanamulam Anantaradha. Yaryeva karna vivarena guham gato na. Pitranu varnita raha bhavadud bhavena. Kumara uchu. Yontarhito ritigato piduratmanam tvam. Sodhyaivano nayanamulam anantaradha. Yaryeva karna vivarena guham gato na. Pitanuvarnitaraha bhavarudbhavena. Kumara uchu. Yontarhitoritigato piduratmanam tvam. Sodhyaivano nayanamulam anantaradha. Yareva karna vivarena guhangato na. Pitranu varnitara bhavat udbhavena. Yontarhito ritigato piduratmanam tvam. Sodhyaivano nayanamulam anantaradha. Yareva karna vivarena guham gato naha. Pitranu varnita raha bhavat udbhavena. Yontar hitori digato piduratmanam tvam. Yontar hitori digato piduratmanam tvam. Sodhyaivano nayanamulam anantaradha Yarye vakarna vivarena guham gato naha Pittanu varnitaraha bhavat udbhavena Yontar hito ridigato piduratmanam tvam Sodhyaivano nayanamulam anantaradha Yarye vakarna vivarena guham gato naha Pittanu varnitaraha bhavad udbhavena Yontar hito ridigato piduratmanam tvam Sodhyaivano nayanamulam anantaradha Yarye vakarna vivarena guham gato naha Pittanu varnitaraha bhavat udbhavena Translation, the Kumaras said, Our dear Lord, you are not manifested to rascals, even though you are seated within the heart of everyone. But as far as we are concerned, we see you face to face, although you are unlimited. The statements we have heard about you from our father, Brahma, through the ears have now been actually realized by your kind appearance. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The so-called yogis who concentrate their mind or meditate upon the impersonal or void are described here. This verse of Srimad Bhagavatam describes persons who are expected to be very expert yogis engaged in meditation, but who do not find the Supreme Personality of Godhead seated within the heart. These persons are described here as duratma, which means a person who has a very crooked heart, or a less intelligent person, just opposite to a mahatma, which means one who has a broad heart. Those so-called yogis who, although engaged in meditation, are not broad-hearted, cannot find the four-handed Narayana form, even though he is seated within their heart. Although the first realization of the Supreme Absolute Truth is impersonal Brahman, one should not remain satisfied with experiencing the impersonal effulgence of the Supreme Lord. In the Isha Upanishad also, the devotee prays that the glaring effulgence of Brahman may be removed from his eyes so that he can see the real personal feature of the Lord and thus satisfy himself fully. Similarly, although the Lord is not visible in the beginning because of his glaring bodily effulgence, if a devotee sincerely wants to see him, the Lord is revealed to him. It is said in Bhagavad Gita that the Lord cannot be seen by our imperfect eyes, he cannot be heard by our imperfect ears, and he cannot be experienced by our imperfect senses. But if one engages in devotional service with faith and devotion, then God reveals himself. Here the four sages, Sanat Kumar, Sanatana, Sanandana, and Sanaka, are described as actually sincere devotees. Although they had heard from their father, Brahma, about the personal feature of the Lord, only the impersonal feature, Brahman, was revealed to them. But because they were sincerely searching for the Lord, they finally saw his personal feature directly, which corresponded with the description given by their father. They thus became fully satisfied. Here they expressed their gratitude because although they were foolish impersonalists in the beginning, by the grace of the Lord they could now have the good fortune to see his personal feature. Another significant aspect of this verse is that the sages describe their experience of hearing from their father, Brahma, who was born of the Lord directly. In other words, the disciplic succession from the Lord to Brahma, and from Brahma to Narada, and from Narada to Vyasa, and so on, is accepted here. Because the Kumaras were sons of Brahma, they had the opportunity to learn Vedic knowledge from the disciplic succession of Brahma. And therefore, in spite of their impersonalist beginnings, they became, in the end, direct seers of the personal feature of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om jnana timiranthasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshuran militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Kumaras are interesting personalities. Of course, we all know how they kept themselves as young boys. Four Kumaras, they're in the Kumara age. So here, first point of this verse, it's interesting that Prabhupada says this verse is about these persons. Actually, they're just mentioned, these Duratmanams. The Duratmanams, what does he say? Our dear Lord, you are not manifested to the rascals. Prabhupada explains this word Duratma. Duratma is different from Mahatma. Dura means bad, du. So he says they have a very crooked heart. Or it also just means a less intelligent person. I've noted a lot of times when Prabhupada uses this phrase, fools and rascals, so many times. And it seems a lot of times that Prabhupada is not really, what he's saying basically is that they're just ignorant. That it's not like they're bad necessarily, they just don't know better. So they're just fools and rascals and they do foolish and rascally things. So he says it with compassion, you can say. It's not with any kind of envy or hatred or avarice, so on. They're just foolish, they just don't know better. Or of course here he does, he says it can either way. Either they're less intelligent or they actually do have a crooked heart. They're not, their heart is not able to accept the form of the Lord. So let's see. So then, and I'm just going through the purport a little bit here. The first realization of the Supreme Absolute Truth is impersonal Brahman. One should not be satisfied with experiencing the impersonal effulgence of the Lord. So when one approaches the Lord, of course, Krishna has these three aspects, his personal feature, Bhagavan, and then Paramatma in the heart, and then the effulgence. So seen from a distance, first you see the effulgence of the Lord. We see this progression many places in the Srimad Bhagavatam. We have many impersonalists spoken of there, and it seems that they're portrayed as basically innocent. They're making gradual progress. So they're approaching the Lord, but at first they can't see him because of they're blinded by the effulgence. So Prabhupada talks about this here. He refers to this Ishvapanishad verse, Hiran Mayena Patrena. The devotee prays, please remove your effulgence so I can see your form of bliss. I think I try to picture this idea. It seems like the devotee knows that all he's seeing is light, but he knows that Krishna is there. He's saying, I'm blinded. So can you lower the light a little bit so I can see you behind the effulgence. So he has some realization. Now that, of course, even that light is very attractive. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, this idea of impersonal liberation, when Gopakumara is ascending up through the different spheres, so there's this attraction, this draw. He's worried. He has to, might say, fight the urge so he doesn't get sucked in and have to merge into the impersonal Brahman effulgence. Why? Because it's also beautiful. Everything about Krishna is beautiful. So his effulgence is beautiful. It's attractive. In fact, we see in Bhagavad Gita, that verse in the sixth chapter talks about, sometimes called the self-realization verse. Yam labdha chaparam labham manyate nadikam tata. The yogi he's meditating, and when he reaches Brahman, he thinks this is it. I don't need it. There's nothing more than this. He's completely satisfied. That's the way he feels when he experiences that Brahman realization. One thing that's interesting about that is because, first of all, it says he also experiences supreme bliss. He's in ecstasy, basically. Not the kind of ecstasy we talk about in devotional service. But it's an overwhelming feeling of happiness. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. But then, actually, even in that section of the Bhagavad Gita, so you read this verse and you say, well, that's it. He's completely satisfied. He doesn't want anything else. Nothing can budge him from that realization. And then just after that, you start hearing about, well, then he goes on to realize Paramatma from there. So this is the realization of Gyan first. But even that realization is so amazing. But still, somehow or other, there's this desire, maybe the intellectual understanding is there, that there is more than this. And then he becomes Paramatma realized. And of course, you have to come to a higher stage of devotion. There has to be some devotion all along the way. Even you can say this idea, this attraction that people have for this light, you might say, it's a kind of devotion. They're certainly devoted in their practices, but there's an attraction, there's a kind of love, you can say. This, because again, this is coming from Krishna. It's Krishna's bodily rays, so naturally, it's very wonderful. So the devotee, this gradual progression. This is described in Bhagavad Gita. Actually, Prabhupada presents most things just in the context of bhakti. He doesn't necessarily describe these steps so much, but that idea is definitely there in the other commentaries. That the person is making gradual process to higher and higher stages, or more and more realization of Krishna. So then Prabhupada gives this interesting statement here. He says, here the four sages, their names, are described as actually sincere devotees. So they're not fake sincere devotees. They're not faking it. They're actually sincere devotees. And I was thinking, it must come from this. The word in the Sanskrit is eva, certainly. I think that's probably why Prabhupada put this in there. Eva, karnavirena, they attain the Lord. Eva, certainly. Karnavirena, through the ears. One thing I always find in these Sanskrit verses, I find interesting, you'll see it often in the prayers, how it goes back and forth between you and he. We have the same thing in this verse. Tvam yu sahi. So they're talking about Krishna in the second person and in the third person in the prayer, in the same prayer, which always strikes me as kind of odd. But it's there a lot. There's many prayers are like that in the Bhagavatam. Glorify. Even the course of Bhagavad Gita is like that. Arjuna or Krishna is talking about himself in the first person, but then he talks about himself in the third person. He talks about Paramatma as if it's somebody else. Like that, or the Supreme Lord, or so on. So I'm not sure why this is like that, but we find it's a very common thing. So anyway, so it says the Kumaras, they were actually sincere devotees. But then it says, although they had heard from their father, Brahma, about the personal feature of the Lord, only impersonal feature, Brahman, was revealed to them. So this whole idea about the Kumaras, they're given as the emblem, you can see, of the Atmarama verse. There, the Shukadeva Goswami especially and the four Kumaras. So Atmarama means they're already Atmarama. They're self-satisfied sages. But, of course, the question was asked about Shukadeva. Why did he was already Atmarama, even from the very birth, even within the womb. So when he came out, why did he spend all his time studying 18,000 verses of the Bhagavatam? So then Suta Goswami, he's asked this by Shonaka Rishi, and he says, the Atmarama verse, which says, because the qualities of the Lord are so attractive, they attract even the Atmaramas, which means they're transcendental. His qualities and the Lord himself, the personal feature of the Lord, they're above just self-realization. We hear, in the Bhagavad Gita, yes, twat maritir. So the atmarati, the attachment to the self, that gives so much pleasure, and it fixes one in transcendence so solidly, generally, that one, of course, it's said there, that's in the context of doing one's duties in the material world. It says if you have that, you don't have to do the ordinary duties. You're on the spiritual platform. So here it says that the Kumaras, they heard about Krishna's personal form from their father. So the whole story of my point was they're given as the prototypical Atmaramas who become Krishna conscious. They go to a higher level of Krishna consciousness, even though they're supposedly completely self-satisfied. So there seem to be things that contradict that always kind of bother me. There's a lot of things bother me, but... So when we first hear about the Kumaras, well, that's not the first time we hear about them. We hear about them in the third chapter of the first canto. They're the earliest avatars who are mentioned in the whole list of avatars in the third chapter of the first canto. So the Kumaras are mentioned first because they're actually avatars of the Lord. They're incarnations of the Lord. And in fact, they represent, this is mentioned, maybe this is from Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on third canto, chapter 12, verse 4. The twelfth chapter is called the creation of the Kumaras and others. So of course, we hear about their creation right in the beginning of that, how they're born from Lord Brahma. And of course, he wants them to, why is Brahma creating these children? Because they're meant to be Prajapatis, to populate the universe. And the Kumaras don't want to do it. So there it's mentioned, I think this is from Vishwanatha Chakravarti. It says that they are incarnations of, well, jnana. They have jnana shakti. So they're shakti of Aishavatars in that sense. They're filled with jnana shakti. But these are the aspects of jnana. Sankhya, yoga, vairagya, and tapas. These four things. So they represent these four things. Sunna, actually in their name, sunna. Sunna means coming together like sankirtan. So sunna, but I always wondered about this. Why are they called the Sunakadi Kumaras? So I thought there must be some significance to that name. So that's one. But I also read elsewhere, this also I think is from Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, or maybe this is in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita. It says they're called the Chatu Sunna because each one of them's name begins with sunna. That's why they're called the Chatu Sunna, the four sunnas, because that's their name. So anyway, there are the, you might say, incarnations of these aspects of jnana. Sankhya, of course, what is Sankhya? Sankhya is analytics, analyzing all the aspects of reality, basically, or especially this material world and how it works. Purusha and Prakriti, that's Sankhya, understanding how this world is created and so on. Then yoga, of course, means especially meditation. And vairagya and tapas. Vairagya means renunciation. Prabhupada would quote this definition, vigata raga iti vairagya. Means that when you don't have raga for the things of this world, attachment to the things of this world, sometimes it's translated, especially I see scholars use this word, dispassion. It means you have no passion, no raga for sense gratification. And then tapas is austerity. So they represent these things. So I'm just going to, I took some different verses connected to different thoughts I've had about the Kumaras. I was going to mention a few things. So this is from, now you may have heard there's more than one disciplic succession described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. When Maitreya and Vidura are speaking, Maitreya already says quite a few things. But in the eighth chapter of the third canto, Maitreya says, now I'm going to speak about the Bhagavatam. So this is how it begins. Some time ago, being inquisitive to know, Sanat Kumar, the chief of the boy saints, accompanied by other great sages, inquired exactly as you have about the truths regarding Vasudeva the Supreme from Lord Sankarshan, who was seated at the bottom of the universe. That's text 3 of chapter 8. It says, the four Kumaras headed by Sanat Kumara, who all knew the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. So this seems to be something that happened later. Glorify the Lord in rhythmic accents with selected words full of affection and love. So this is their offering prayers to Lord Sankarshan. At that time, Lord Sankarshan, with his thousands of raised hoods, so he's in his snake form, serpent form, began to radiate an effulgence from the glowing stones on his head. You can always picture these episodes or scenes that take place in the Bhagavatam. You know, you really think about it. What an amazing thing. You have this serpent with unlimited heads, basically. It has jewels on each head, and they're just so effulgent, they're practically blinding. So the Kumaras are so amazing, they can go and have association. So this is of course, the Kumaras have a parampara, Kumara Sampradaya. So this apparently is where they heard, of course, each one of the Sampradaya Acharyas had direct connection with Krishna, like Lord Brahma, of course, he heard directly from Krishna. So the Kumaras, they heard from Sankarshan at the bottom of the universe. So here's another little something. Now, the Kumaras also come up in the fourth canto with Prithu Maharaj. In the beginning, when Prithu Maharaj appears, then the suttas, magadas, and vandis, these classes of reciters glorifying the Lord. So they glorify King Prithu with all kinds of prayers and praise. And one thing Prithu says is, don't praise me now, I haven't done anything yet. He says, that's like saying, you know, if you'd gone to college, you'd be really educated. Something, some example like that is given. If you'd studied, you'd be really smart. He says, it's like that. I haven't done anything yet, so don't praise me. But that's just a brief interlude, because after that, they just go on praising him more and more. So one of the things they say is that you'll be able to see effulgent sages. Maybe specifically it says this is part of their prayer here. This King Prithu will meet Sanat Kumar, one of the four Kumaras, in the garden of his palace compound. It's interesting that it only mentions one here, because when you hear it later, there are all four of them. The king will worship him with devotion and will be fortunate to receive instructions by which one can enjoy transcendental bliss. And they appear, he's in his garden, and there are his citizens are there. So they come kind of like floating in from outer space, and they're so effulgent, everyone's so amazed. So then, this is not necessarily any order here. This is again going back to the appearance of the Kumaras in the third canto. It says, Brahma spoke to his sons after generating them. My dear sons, he said, now generate progeny. So this is the line that always gets me. But due to their being attracted to Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they aimed at liberation, and therefore they expressed their unwillingness. So supposedly, before they went to Vaikuntha, they were impersonalists. But and the word there is Vasudeva Parayana. So we have, you know, names of Krishna, Narayana Parayana, Hari Parayana, Vasudeva Parayana. Parayana means that your heart is completely given over to that person, basically, is the idea behind it. So it says here that they were devotees of Vasudeva. So I always wonder, wait a minute, why is it later, when they went to Vaikuntha, they're called impersonalists? Anyway, it says here, now this is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. He doesn't translate it as that they were devotees. He says, they were not inclined to produce progeny because karma yoga, producing ignorance, destroys knowledge. So this whole sentence is like, what? In other words, they were supposed to become grihasthas, which means practicing karma yoga. You have an occupation. Your occupation is creating children, I guess. So they didn't want to do it because it says it produces ignorance. Karma yoga produces ignorance? Okay. All I could think was because you're involved in this material world, it's not the same as being a complete transcendentalist sannyasi above everything. You're there, embedded in this material life and so on. So there's some ignorance involved in that. Just like Priyavrata, he was asked, he was a disciple of Narada Muni, and Narada Muni makes everybody a sannyasi. But he was asked to rule the world. So he was hesitant. No, I don't want to be in Maya like that. But then, of course, he did it. Lord Brahma came down and said, can you do this? He said, okay. And then it says, actually, he did kind of fall in Maya. At least that's what he felt later. He said, I'm just in Maya. This is, I got to stop. I got to get out of here. So he did. Anyway, Bhanu Swami, in his translation of the verse, he translates the verse when he's doing the commentaries, translating the commentaries of Vishwanath, because Vishwanath doesn't translate the verse because he's writing in Sanskrit. But based on well, I don't know why he says this, because this is not what Vishwanath says in this particular instance. But Bhanu Swami translates it as being devoted to the Supreme Lord. That's why they didn't want to get married and have children, because they're already devotees. So at least that's the way he was looking at it. So it's a little kind of interesting. So here's something from this chapter, which also I think is something that made me scratch my head. Through the yoga maya of the Lord, the Kumaras attained Vaikuntha. Oh yeah, this is, because this, I came across this in reading Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries. Through the maya of the Lord, the Kumaras attained Vaikuntha, the transcendental place most worshipped by the Lord, and so on. They attained Vaikuntha under the control of the Lord and experienced the highest bliss. So this is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. This verse describes the Kumaras' trip to Vaikuntha. They attained that place not by their own powers, but upon receiving the power of the Lord Shakti, by the desire of the Lord, by his yoga maya, so that they could experience the highest bliss of the Lord's mercy. So this idea, so this surprised me when I read this. I said, oh, by the Lord's yoga maya. Because in Prabhupada's purport, he attributes it to their own shakti, their own yoga maya. But it's interesting because the verse, the word or the phrase yoga maya appears in that verse. And Srila Prabhupada actually translates it in two ways, because in the beginning of the purport, he talks about how it was essentially the Kumara's own shakti, their own yoga maya, you can say, their own maya. Of course, maya means energy or power, but by the power of their tapasya and their meditation, they were able to go to Vaikuntha and realize the Lord. But at the end of the purport, Prabhupada talks about yoga maya as Krishna's yoga maya. So he actually uses it in both ways in the same purport. He gives two different analyses, you might say, of this particular verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now there's another, actually I was going to look at this. This has always struck me too. This is in the same chapter, text 31. We hear about when they get to the gates of Vaikuntha, what happened, of course, they were stopped by the gatekeepers, Jai and Vijay. So it says they became angry. So here, let's see. It says, their eyes suddenly turned red because of anger due to their great eagerness to see their most beloved master, Sri Hari, the personality of Godhead. So again, this is Prabhupada's translation. You say, wait a minute, that they weren't devotees yet. They were angry. Of course, then I was thinking, well, maybe they weren't devotees yet, but that doesn't mean they weren't eager to see him. Why not? They'd heard about Narayana. They heard about Lord Vishnu. They were eager to see him. And maybe they weren't devotees yet, but still, they wanted to go in. They wanted to get in. So that can be one way to resolve, which to me seems a contradiction. Let's see. Oh, I think I was on this page. Okay, I went backwards in my notes here. So that's just that point. Why were they angry? And of course, the other thing is, this is another problem too, which I hadn't thought about. Because when they see, the whole idea, this you don't know the verse probably, but Tasya Aravinda Nayanasya Padaravinda Kingjalkamisha Tulsi Makaranda Vayu, where it says this is the transformation verse, you can say. They were impersonalists, but then when they smelled the saffron and tulsi, the fragrance of that coming from the lotus feet of the Lord, it entered into their nostrils. And then Antarga Gatav Swarivarena Chakaratesham, as it goes. Tangshobam akshara jutam apichitana tanbo. So akshara jusham means they were absorbed in impersonal liberation. But they felt some change in their body and mind. Well, that's not supposed to happen. When you're an impersonalist merged in the Brahma Jyoti, you don't have changes in your body and mind when you experience something. You're just shanti, shanti, shanti. That's it. But here we're hearing that even at the gate of Vaikuntha, they became angry. Something, wait a minute, what are they doing getting angry? They're supposed to be shanti, shanti, shanti. So that's another one of these things I say, okay, whatever. let's see what else I have here to confuse you. This is text 38. Let's see. Oh, yeah, this also. It says, now we hear that they were impersonalists and they weren't qualified to, even their father told them about the Lord's personal form. They were only qualified. So here this says, this is text 38. Now let's see, I'm not sure if this is Vishwanath or Prabhupada. I think this is Vishwanath's translation, or Bhanuswami. The sages headed by Sanaka Rishi, Sanaka in other words, the Kumaras saw that the Supreme Personality of Vishnu, who was formerly visible only within their hearts in ecstatic trance. This is Prabhupada's translation, actually. So here we're hearing that they had Paramatma realization. They weren't just impersonalists. At least that's the way Prabhupada translates this. Let's see, what does Sanskrit say here? I don't even see it. Anyway, I'll go on. Had now naturally become visible to their eyes. So anyway, so that's the point. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, he phrases it a little differently. He says, he came within the Kumara's sight, Aksha Vishayam. That's what it says. Maybe a diacritic is missing. It's Vishayam, not, yeah. Aksha Vishayam, which it probably translates it as now a subject matter for seeing. Oh, here we go. This is the next line. Swasamadhi bhagyam. Visible simply by ecstatic trance. So this is where Prabhupada gets the idea that in their hearts they're already seeing this form by their ecstatic trance. Swasamadhi bhagyam. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur takes it slightly differently, apparently, because he says, some of this is a little confusing to me. But anyway, it says, he came within the Kumara's sight, Aksha Vishayam. Did they have continual vision of the Lord? No. I'm not sure what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur means like that. Had they formerly had continual vision? Or in this context, I'm not quite sure what that sentence means. Did they have continual vision of the Lord? Now the other thing, I read Bhanuswami a lot, and he mixes up continual and continuous. Just for your own edification, continual means periodic. You might say daily is continual, regular. Continuous means nonstop. That's continuous and continual. They don't have the same meaning. Anyway, he uses continuous here. I think he probably means continual. I think he probably means continuous. Did they have continuous vision of the Lord? No. He was the very form of auspiciousness for those who had realized the bliss of Brahman in their heart through samadhi. So here Prabhupada is taking this swasamadhi bhagyam this aksha vishayam, the now a subject matter for seeing, visible simply by ecstatic trance. Prabhupada is taking it as the form that they're now seeing. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying that this is actually referring to their Brahman realization. He was the very form of auspiciousness for those who had realized the bliss of Brahman in their heart through samadhi. Then he quotes the Kumaras, oh, our samadhi has now become successful by seeing the Lord in person. So you can see there's some room here, obviously, to you know, take these things in different ways. So the acharyas do that, of course. They sometimes see things in slightly different ways, give different interpretations. And they're all okay because of who they are. Of course, the Kumaras, I was mentioning about, you know, some of their qualifications. Well, they're listed as among the Mahajans, the Kumaras are there. So they're certainly authorities, and they teach in different places. For example, as I was mentioning before, Prithu Maharaj. So that section, I was always, when I became a devotee, that came out during the summer 1974 when I joined, or maybe later that year, the fourth canto, part three it was at that time. So when I got there and I read that chapter, the teachings of the Kumaras, I said, wow, this is amazing. This is really wonderful. I loved it. There's a one verse that I always liked. It says, how does it go? There's no greater obstruction to one's self-interest than to think that other subject matters are more, what is the word? Attractive or relishable or something. Pleasing. I think the word is pleasing. Than to think other subject matters are more pleasing than self-realization. There's no greater obstruction to one's self-interest than to think other subjects are more pleasing than self-realization. So I thought, wow, that really says it all, doesn't it? We have to realize that the most pleasing thing, the only... I just came across this phrase. Prabhupada, he talked about the mission of life. I thought, wow, that's... People don't realize we have a mission, actually. Human life comes with it, or is probably a responsibility. So we have a mission. We've been given a mission, and we have to fulfill that mission. So as this line, I always remember this verse from the teachings of the Kumaras. It's very wonderful, their teachings to Prithu Maharaj. So again, they're Mahajans, and they teach us. They teach in so many ways, so many wonderful points. Of course, they're great gyani. There's another verse that says, I think this is, where is it? What's the context? I forget now. It mentions the Kumaras as, says the knowledge was lost, and they explained it in such a way that everyone could understand it. This is a real art, actually, because our philosophy is very deep. So to be able to explain it clearly so that everyone can understand it, that's a great, to be empowered to do that. They were empowered to do that. All right, I'll stop here. My mental agitation's going on. Trivikram Prabhu. And then Madhumati. Oh, we'll do Madhumati first. Let's do Madhumati first today. I just had my eyes checked and my peripheral vision is okay, but maybe I still have to turn my head a little bit.
Just a couple thoughts came to my mind as you were saying about the Kumaras not wanting to take grihastha life, you know. Mm-hmm. Because grihastha life means fruitive activities, and fruitive activities means ignorance. I mean, that's one of the hardest part about Bhagavatam talking so heavy, but... Yeah. Fruitive activities means ignorance, where people think fruitive activities is, wow, perfection of someone's life, you know. So anyway, that's one thought came to my mind, if you have something to comment. And the other part was Vasudeva Parayana. You know, I mean, we think Vasudeva Parayana means performing devotional service. But if you really think about... them being Vasudeva Parayana means one who is dedicated to Vasudeva, which could mean Paramatma realization, could mean, in some sense,
yeah,
could mean even Brahman realization, because you are Vasudeva Parayana, you know.
Mm.
So anyway, that's just the thought came to my mind about those couple things that you mentioned.
I always think of that in relation to, I'm sure the impersonalists translate the word Vasudeva impersonally.
Yeah.
Because it means everywhere, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's definitely a name even for what we would call the Brahma Jyoti. You can call Vasudeva.
Exactly. So yeah, so I was
actually thinking, there's one place where Prabhupada says this is, he said, in fact, I just came across something similar in Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary on the Chaitanya Bhagavat. He says that Vasudeva is Vishnu without his energy. Say, wow, how do you do that?
Wow.
So maybe it's just a conception, you might say. But usually Vasudeva, it's usually about, you know, even the word Vishnu has the same idea. I guess they come from the same root, maybe, I'm not sure. But it means all pervasiveness. So when they, an impersonalist would probably read this verse and say, Vasudeva Brahmana means they were impersonalists, right?
Wow.
But we don't take it that way, and Prabhupada doesn't take it that way. I mean, he takes it that, it says it, you know, they were devoted to the Supreme Lord. Yeah, the other point about, you know, fruitive activities being Maya, I mean, we see in one sense, just like Narada Muni, he doesn't want anybody becoming grihasthas, right? Daksha's trying to do his service and populate the universe, and then Narada Muni makes all his sons sannyasis. Narada Muni really has focused vision. Everyone should be a sannyasi, baby, basically. So we see this kind of thing. Of course, in one sense, you can say this is like the, you might say the traditional view. The traditional view is that you have to renounce material life. Even what does Shukadeva Goswami, how does he begin? Householders are all in Maya. That's the first thing he says. That's the beginning of his teaching. Householders are all in Maya. And you think, well, back then, 5,000 years ago, what to speak of now? So that's sort of like the general idea. And that's why, of course, we have Varnashram, too. You're supposed to work your way to full renunciation, complete renunciation. Of course, even in the Bhagavad Gita, we get a different view. Krishna says, well, that's not really sannyas. Sannyas means to give up the fruits of your activities. It doesn't mean you have to stop doing your duties and so on. So that idea is there, but it seems like it's a very prominent feature of the Vedic culture, at least traditionally, that you have to give it all up because it's so entangling. Leave it. Go to the Himalayas. Go to the north. I always think, I think I'd want to go to the south, but... It's cold up there in the Himalayas. Of course, that's part of the tapasya, isn't it? Sit in the ice, sit on the ice and eat snow.
When Lord Brahma wants audience with Lord Vishnu, he will go to the milk ocean and meditate, say, 100 years, and then he would get audience. When the demigods want to get audience, they would have to meditate for like 1,000 celestial years. It takes them longer. So it seems like the purer and more devoted one is, he gains access to the Lord easier. You know, and maybe that's the case with the Kumaras too. I mean, it took them a little while, really. And then, and this brings the point with the impersonalists too. I mean, because they're maybe not so dedicated and devoted, so they're able to go up to the impersonal Brahman, and they can go beyond that way. So
yeah, one thing is, of course, the Bhagavatam is not chronological, so we don't know the whole, you know, biography of the Kumaras and what stages they went through and so on. Just like in that, where I was reading about, they go see Sankarshan. So it says they traveled through the, you know, the waterways. They came, they arrived there, along with other sages from the higher heavenly planets. Now they live on Tapaloka, generally, or they sometimes live on Satyaloka also. So the whole scheme of things, their lives, and it's also they don't age, so you can't tell. Usually we can tell someone's age, you know, how old they are by how old they look. But there's no progression like that in their lives. They always look the same. So as far as time, actually you were at the beginning of your question, I was thinking, it's up to Krishna how long it takes. Because it's swayam. Oh, that's another thing I want to mention, actually. It's interesting that Prabhupada says this verse is from Bhagavad Gita. Really, it sounds like he's talking about Atta Shri Krishna Nama Adi Nabhaved Grayam Indriyai Sevan Mukahi Jivado Swayam Eva Spuratyada. Because it doesn't say directly in the Bhagavad Gita, at least I can't think of any verse. What is the translation here? It says that one cannot see the Lord, he cannot be heard by our imperfect ears, seen by our imperfect eyes, experienced by our imperfect senses. But if one engages in devotional service with faith and devotion, then God reveals himself. So that sounds exactly like a translation of Atasri Krishna Namadi, which is not in the Bhagavad Gita. But I was thinking, well, Prabhupada can see it in the Bhagavad Gita. Maybe it's not one verse, but the idea is certainly there. The idea is certainly there in the Bhagavad Gita. So in any case, the end of that verse is Swayam Eva Spurati Yada. He reveals himself. It's not that we access. I always think this idea that we have Ado Shada Taru Saru Sangata Bhajana, it sounds like we're just going to climb our way up there and eventually we're going to see Krishna face to face. But it doesn't work that way. Krishna has to reveal himself. It's not mechanical. Of course, mechanical, we think, well, you know, our heart's not into it. You're just doing it mechanically. But it's also not just, you know, by your sadhana itself, by your effort, you're going to get Krishna. No, it doesn't work that way. Bhakti has to be granted to you, and Krishna has to reveal himself to you. Swayam eva spurati yada, no matter what your qualifications are. So it's up to Krishna ultimately. Just like the story of Dhruva Maharaj, I think, wow, there's so many. What was so great about him? There are all these yogis meditating for thousands of years like he was doing. He only did it for 6 months. And then Krishna appeared to him. So you think, well, that's just Krishna's mercy. I was just reading an academic article from a book that some devotees, scholars, put together about the Bhagavatam. And in the Pushtimarg, Vallabhacharya Sampradaya, they're really into this causeless mercy, you might say. So they would say that, you know, just out of nowhere, Krishna will just give someone bhakti. Of course, we see that also in some leelas that we hear about. So anyway, the point I'm making is that we don't, in a sense, attain Krishna, work our way up to Krishna's association. He has to grant it. So whether we're Kumaras or who we are, it's up to him how he does it. Of course, you think that the Kumaras are actually on their own strength. Huh? That's why Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says it was by Krishna's yoga maya that they were able to see Krishna. It wasn't by their own practice of austerity and meditation. It was by his mercy. Okay?
I have a question.
Yes.
Thank you for the class, Guru. When we think about these stages like, you know, Paramatma in the soul and Brahman realization and becoming a pure devotee, these are not like stages that are locked in. It's like gradual stages. So at any time, you can probably move from one to the other because you said there's so many elements there, like Krishna's mercy, mm-hmm. your endeavor, or your sincerity. So sometimes when I'm thinking Brahmananda, the stages seem like concrete, but it's nothing is real concrete. It's all very, very, how do you say, they're subtle yeah. and they move. So sometimes in my mind, when you think that these people are, you know, impersonalists, they can change any time because so many elements are there.
Actually, they have to be blessed by the devotee association. Unless they get devotee association, actually, this is a repeated theme in Vishwanath and Baladev's commentaries in the Gita, how karma, jnana, yoga, you can't get perfection in any of these unless you have some bhakti. And you get that bhakti by the association of a devotee. So then, of course, you have to take advantage. As you were talking, I was thinking, well, just like Shukadev, he didn't go through Paramatma realization, apparently. We don't hear about that. He went straight from Brahman realization to bhakti. So how, of course, that also you can say by devotee association. Of course, he also had the association of Krishna in the womb. Krishna said, okay, you can come out now. You'll be okay, don't worry. But like you're saying, they're subtle. I think, boy, Brahman, that's a tough one, what that means exactly. Because you think, well, you know, what kind of self-consciousness is there? Because generally we have the idea, this idea of merging. You know, you don't become Brahman, but still in a sense, it seems like you lose a sense of your own identity. But if you do that, then how can you go anywhere from there? And even the Kumaras and Shukadeva Goswami, he was in the womb, but still he was in this world in a sense. He was existing and apparently conscious of what was going on outside. So Brahman realization, you can somehow, that's why I don't understand how it works. It seems like you can be conscious of the outside world but still be merged in Brahman. Or maybe you're not exactly merged. Then there's a whole idea of Jivan Mukta. You're in this body, but you're liberated. So that's different from, what's the word? It means when you're outside Dehatma or something, I forget the word. When you leave the body, then your realization is different from when you're Jivan Mukta. Even though you are Mukta, still there's a difference. So it's a really... And Jiva Goswami didn't write a Brahman Sandarbha, so we don't have details on that.
I was just curious, you said they were avatars.
Yeah.
They're Shaktivation. How could they be impersonalist? How, if they're an avatar, how could they not know
well,
about
that's how they're empowered.
Krishna? Of course, it's Leela, but...
Everything is... I think in one sense, everybody's a Shakti avatar because we don't have anything if we get it, unless we get it from Krishna's Shakti, right? All the Shakti comes from Krishna. But of course, it's a term that's used that they're specifically empowered. So I think that the Kumaras had a particular role to play. So they came to personify jnana, you can say, jnana marg. So they were empowered in that way. So they had a specific Shakti from Krishna to be like that. So you can be invested with different kinds of Shakti and to do different things. Isn't it? I think I heard that Bhaktisiddhanta said that Hitler was a Shakti avatar or something like that. You know, you can take the word, it just means when Krishna specifically powers someone to do something. So if he empowers someone to kill millions of people, in a sense, you can say that person is a Shakti Avesh. And that means they're invested, the Shakti has descended into them so that they can do something amazing. Of course, there are, you know, specific definitions of these things and delineations in different categories. But like that, you can be a Shakti Avesh avatar and play a role for Krishna. So they were, yeah, their role was to be impersonalists. Of course, then they became devotees. But that's, you can say also, that's part of that. That's, they were invested with more Shakti from Krishna, the Bhakti Shakti. Now, Narada, of course, this again, we have these different roles. So Narada's role, you can say, is that he has Bhakti Shakti. He's the Shakti avatar, Shakti Avesh avatar of Bhakti. Whereas they are the Shakti Avesh avatars of Jnana. Well, these are described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, these different Shakti Aveshas. Like Prithu Maharaj, he has the Shakti to rule and so on. Even Ananta Shesha is said to be a Shakti Avesh avatar. He has the power to hold up all the Bhudarana Shakti. He holds up all the worlds. So the different categories of living entities that can be invested with Shakti and be called Shakti Avesh. All right, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.